Who is running the country? That is the real question. What if I told you Barack Obama is still president of the United States? We make that argument. We also talk about why is Joe Biden always doing these press conferences in a fake White House right outside of the White House? That's kind of weird and bizarre. We dive deep into the question of the FBI going after parents and what it's going to take for you to stand up for your rights in your country right now and so much more. If you want to support our program, it's charliekirk.com/support. I want to thank Nick for your very generous support from Utah. Allison from San Diego, California, thank you. Peter from Watertown, Wisconsin, thank you. Betsy from Hillsboro, New Mexico, thank you. Debbie from Mesa, Arizona, thank you. Carl from Carlsbad, California, thank you. It's interesting. Kathleen from Apple Valley, California, thank you. Glenna from Fort Worth, Texas, and so many more people that have supported us at charliekirk.com/support. Are you guys coming to Phoenix, Arizona, December 18, 19, 20, 21? AmFest brought to you by Turning Point USA, tpusa.com. Check it out. Come to America Fest in downtown Phoenix. It's going to be amazing. Tickets are running out, everybody, so go to tpusa.com/AmFest right now to get your tickets to come to Turning Point USA's amazing pro-American celebration, AmFest, tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Check it out right now. I think you are going to love it at tpusa.com/AmFest. It's going to be incredible. Okay, email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. A lot happening, everybody. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Got a lot of good questions here that I want to get to. And let me just start with kind of a general one that a lot of people are asking about, where they're saying, Charlie, what do I do about my employer that is now mandating the vaccine? We've been through this a good amount, but I want to just tell you that the people that are emailing us and are willing to lose their jobs are some of the most courageous people in the entire country. But it's also important to realize that these employers and these bosses and these CEOs that are actually putting forth these mandates, they are doing so before the actual vaccine mandate has actually been put in writing. The mandate currently does not exist. It's just on a piece of paper. It's a press release. We've all heard about the alleged vaccine mandate for private companies of 100 people or more. I'm reading from thefederalist.com. It was all over the news. The problem is that it still has not been actually implemented as an executive order. A lot of people, including myself, have said we're going to sue about it. And I asked the kind of legal team we have, I said, are we suing? They said, there's nothing there. There's been no mandate been sent to the White House Office for Information and Regulatory Approval Affairs. There's a no mandate sent to OSHA. There's no executive order. There's just press releases. We are now being governed by press releases and the threat of the implementation of doing this. Stephanie McFarland, spokeswoman for the Indiana Occupational Safety and Health Administration, said, quote, there is nothing yet that gives employers any mandate. This president made an announcement on this asking OSHA to do it. We've not seen anything. And so as it is right now, any company that is complying, there's nothing to comply with. They're complying with a press release. And so we have people that are now losing their jobs because they do not want to get vaccinated. By the way, against a vaccine that is not even guaranteed to prevent you from getting the virus, that actually new data is showing in California that vaccinated people are having a more difficult time with the Fauci virus than unvaccinated people. Can we get that study again, Connor? Because people are always asking us about studies. And so you have employers that are now destroying entire workplace environments around something that does not exist. It's a mirage. It's vapor. As we went through in great detail, not great detail, but good detail, it's the sword of Damocles. Everyone's terrified of it. Maybe the FBI is going to show up if you're a school board mom and arrest you because you violated the thinking rules. Maybe they're going to show up and ask, where is your papers? Are you vaccinated? And demand that you show your medical status. And we're going to post this on charliekirk.com, but the new California study finds that vaccinated individuals are susceptible to COVID variant infections at more than unvaccinated. In addition, the increase in frequency of more antibody-resistant strains in the population correlates with the increase in the frequency of the vaccination in the population. The antibody-resistant strains are predominantly circulating in the vaccinated community. That is medrxiv.org. We will post that to make sure that everyone sees that study. And meanwhile, Iceland stops the use of the Moderna vaccine, not just for teenagers or people under 30, for everyone. The risk of heart problems is too high, according to Icelandic health authorities. Back in May, right before I got married, the last episode we did, actually, remember this, Connor? We asked our audience, hey, has anyone had any adverse events to the vaccine? See you in a couple weeks. I came back to thousands and thousands and thousands of emails of adverse events of people dropping, of people that parents dropped dead, losing regular mobile, you know, motor function. And of course, the media continued their propagandist push against anyone that dared ask the question. We dove right into the vaccines, and I left Connor and Andrew to deal with it when I was on my honeymoon. It was the last podcast and last broadcast I did. I said, let's do the most controversial thing imaginable. You know, we could have done low taxes, high taxes, why socialism is bad. Thank you very much. I'm getting married. I said, you know what? If I'm going to be without a phone for a week, we might as well go as hot as we can. Vaccines. And that was before people were willing to speak out against this sort of stuff. But I just want to get to this. There's a question here. And by the way, if I answer your question, freedom@charliekirk.com, then you get a signed copy of my book. There's someone I was emailing with yesterday. I want to find that email. It was a super great guy. And he asked me, he said, Charlie, what do I do to try? Here it is, actually. Hey, Charlie, my wife is about to lose her job. She's just a caseworker for a healthcare company, not a nurse or anything. Religious exemption is not working. Please speak to us what we can do about it so we don't lose our jobs. And my response was this. I said, hi, Zach, I will speak about this. Unfortunately, due to how messed up our country is and how weak our opposition party is, your wife might have to lose her job. Let me see if I can help you. I wish I had better news. And Zach responded very maturely. He responded like an adult. He said, thanks for saying it without any hopium. He does listen to the Charlie Kirk Show. Can't wait until you come back to Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. We'd love to set up an event there. That we have people that are losing their life for a mandate, lives, not their actual life, for a mandate that actually doesn't exist. There is no mandate. Now, that could change at any moment, but there doesn't seem to be any rumblings as if this mandate is legit. And this is a brilliant piece of tyrannical rule by the Biden regime. I have to say, I'm going to tip my hat that I'm now wearing. I should have saw this one coming, but I think we are the first program to pinpoint what really happened here, which is this. Biden met with his team, Ron Klain and all of them. They said, okay, we're going to mandate every business to comply with our vaccine protocols. And then someone from the White House counsel's office said, yeah, that's probably going to get overturned. And then Ron Klain probably said, hey, how about this? How about we say it? We're going to do it. We're going to enforce it, but we don't do it. Therefore, every employer who wants to do it is going to have an excuse to do it. It dries up the competitive labor markets of the unvaccinated companies, and we have a hologram mandate. You can put your hand right over it. It's not real. It's a mirage. It's vapor. It's smoke screen. And the brilliance of this, and now we need to wake up and tell people about this, hello, is that people think it's real because the president said it. Employers enforce it because they think it's coming, yet there's nothing here. It was originally on page 168 of the massive reconciliation bill that is in limbo. But this is another example of a Democrat bluff that we all fell for. So Biden says it, but their strategy all along was never to actually put this in an executive order. Now, that might change, but it's been over a month. I thought we're in the midst of the worst pandemic in human history. If that was so, Joe Biden should have signed it the next day and said, you know what, take me to court. But Joe Biden knows he would have lost in court. Therefore, Joe Biden knew if he was going to lose in court, it's better just to say it, not issue it, and have people enforce it themselves because they think that OSHA might show up, which is not going to happen, by the way. We are being played right now, everybody. There is no executive order. TheFederalist.com by Joy Pullman, phenomenal piece. She closes it by saying, these people believe they are royalty, and too many Americans are acting like they're losers, serfs, instead of citizens endowed by God with inalienable rights, included the right to consent, through elected representatives, not never elected dictatorial bureaucrats, to rules that restrict our rights, everyday lives, and human dignity. Joy Pullman writes for The Federalist. And the title of the article is brilliant. Joe Biden's vaccine mandate does not exist. It's just a press release. We're being ruled by a hologram presidency. Don't fall for it. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. There's so much going on in the world, whether it's stuff you're excited about or stuff that you do not want to talk about, like everything coming out of Joe Biden's mouth. You can't always control what's going on out there, but you can control what's going into your head with a pair of beautiful Raycon wireless earbuds in your ears. My team member, Mikey, he loves Raycons. He wears them all the time when he's working out, when he's walking around. Look, the Raycon brand is incredible. I know I travel with my Raycons all over the country, and the new everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. You get three new sound profiles to make sure everything you're listening to sounds its best, just with the amount of bass. And Raycon earbuds offer 8 hours of playtime and 32-hour battery life. Raycons start at half the price of the other premium audio brands, but they sound just as good. And Raycons come with 45 days of happiness guarantee. Right now, Kirk listeners get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/Kirk. That's buyraycon.com/Kirk and save 15% off on Raycons. Buyraycon.com/Kirk. Let's get to a topic. We try not to emphasize this too much, but it is part of the game, which is Joe Biden losing his mind? We don't spend too much time on this for good reason. The answer is yes. Next question. But sometimes it's just important to kind of remind people the unfortunate brain dead president that we have, which then, of course, makes it susceptible to another regime controlling him. Now, I want to get to this question here from Rick, though. Charlie, who's really running the country? Perfect. That's a great segue to this tape that I wanted to play anyway. And the answer of who is running the country is very simple and clear. In fact, I want to hear from you, freedom@charliekirk.com, who you think is running the country. But it's so simple. It's so obvious. And we're going to tell you. But first, here's a nice little montage of Joe Biden in clear cognitive decline. Cut 118.
We've got state leadership here, Lieutenant Governor Julius here, Stratton, and the Ohio, Pennsylvania. I'm from Pennsylvania. The Illinois president of Don Harmon. We've got great labor leaders here, too. Tim, where's Tim? There you go, Tim. Thank you. And Robert Reiter, R-E-I-T-E-R, Chicago Federation of Labor. And folks, That's how we beat COVID-19. You know, if I can digress for just a second, last night I was on the television. I was on the telephone with a person at an emergency hospital ward.
Yeah. Did you understand a word of that? So who's running the country, really? I want to play this other tape here, though, of 113, because it's very interesting, because someone asked me about this as well, emailed us. Teresa asked me about this. Cut 113. Why does Joe Biden keep on going to this fake White House set when he actually is in the White House? It's really bizarre. Cut 113.
Why go to the trouble? They already have a White House. Well, Stephen Miller spent the last 4 years in the White House as an advisor to Trump, and here's his explanation for it, because he would know. Quote, the reason Biden uses this bizarre virtual set for televised meetings and not an actual room like the East Room, the Cabinet, the Oval, the Roosevelt Sit Room, etc. There are a lot of rooms. The reason he does this is because it allows him to read a script directly from a face-on monitor and without teleprompter glass that can be seen on camera. Oh.
So who's in charge? I haven't heard enough people say this, but it's so clear that Obama's running the country. It's so obvious that Obama's in charge, that Barry Sotero is the president of the United States. Joe Biden was Obama's vice president. You got nothing but Obama sycophant staffers all around him. There's only two different ruling cartels that run the party, that run the country if a Democrat's in control. It's that simple. Do you have the Clinton cartel or the Obama cartel? And remember, they don't get along. They got along by a marriage of convenience. They hate each other, actually. There's a lot of evidence to show that. Hillary Clinton wanted to run the campaign her way in 2016. She had her people, her loyalists, and Obama's team was just kind of pushed aside. Obama is running the country from Martha's Vineyard. He's calling the shots. You see, Obama sees something in Biden that he was never able to do himself. Run the ship into the ground. Why? Well, it's because Biden doesn't want to have a Netflix special after this. Biden's wife does not want to become president. Obama, who is the true power source of the American left, he has never stopped being that. Regardless of his maskless illegal parties that he's having in Martha's Vineyard, regardless of all these different aspects and components of this, let's not fool ourselves. People say, Charlie, who's running the country? Charlie, who's really in charge? It's not Joe Biden, because we play this ridiculous thing. Yes, it's Ron Klain. It's all these people. All of it, they all understand the hierarchy. And who's above Obama? Valerie Jarrett. Valerie Jarrett is the only person who stayed every single day from start to finish in the Obama White House. She made sure she cleaned up everything. We need to stop focusing on Biden. Start focusing on the regime behind him, which has never stopped being Barack Obama. Hey, everybody. China is taking over the world. Do you know that you might be buying Chinese meat? Yeah. Well, I'm telling you right now, you need to buy American meat. I want you to imagine 100,000 Americans losing their jobs. Well, it's happened. Since 2015, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches in the United States have shut down. Why? Because foreign meat coming into America, being labeled as America meat, very, very deceivingly labeled American meat, is coming in. If you guys want a box of meat, comes to your door discreetly, it's phenomenal. GoodRanchers.com. Do you know that the product of USA tag has been stolen by foreign countries? They process their meat here and label it like it came from the United States. Because of these labeling laws that favor foreign imported meat, over 100,000 independent American farms and ranches have closed since 2015. Good Ranchers is here to put America number one. When Good Ranchers comes to the office, I tell you, it's amazing steak, incredible chicken. It is marbled beautifully at GoodRanchers.com. Go to GoodRanchers.com/Charlie right now to save $20 off, or better yet, subscribe and save each box of mouth-watering American meats that will show up on your schedule right to your door. That's right. Get $20 off and free express shipping if you go to goodranchers.com/Charlie or use promo code Charlie at checkout. That's $20 off and free express shipping. Here, look, when you guys go to goodranchers.com/Charlie, it fills three needs. Number one, you all have to eat. Number two, it supports the Charlie Kirk Show. Number three, it helps American farmers and ranchers. Eat, help the show, help the country. Goodranchers.com/Charlie. I want to get to some more questions here. I want to, there's a question here of this mom that emailed us. She says, Charlie, I'm very worried after speaking at a school board meeting that I'm now going to be targeted by the FBI. What do I make of this? Thanks so much. Well, let me put your mind a little bit at ease. Unless you broke the law, this is all just about chilling and suppressing speech, trying to use the Federal Bureau of Investigation of the Department of Homeland Security to go after you because you've been showing up to school boards across the country. But let's stop fooling ourselves. The government already has lists of extremists, dissidents, and people that they don't care for, that they are willing to use government power to try and eliminate. Rand Paul has said this for quite some time. In Cut 112, Rand Paul says to be afraid of your government and that a list of watch lists of dissenters already exists. You know, it would be helpful if more Senate Republicans actually took Rand Paul seriously and decided to get to the bottom of this. Instead, they're too busy voting for infrastructure or whatever. Eat me last, Republicans, is what I call those people. Cut 112.
I'm very concerned, and I'm sure that there are people across the country who are concerned that if they go to their local school board and say the wrong thing, that they're going to end up on some list that Merrick Garland goes after. What would you say to those people today?
I would say be afraid. Be afraid of your government. And that's a sad thing from someone in the government to say. But the thing is those lists already exist.
Those lists already exist. Now, why would you make a list? You make a list with the intent of trying to act on it. Jen Psaki was asked about this. And she was asked, what do you think about the Department of Justice acquiescing to teacher unions who want to treat parents like domestic terrorists? Of course, she defends it and she deflects it. And when you go into the details of the actual memo from Merrick Garland, the details are so incredibly light. There's a couple examples here and there, if that, none of which are federal crimes, by the way. So why is this the FBI's jurisdiction? Why not just deal with local police if it's really that big of a deal? Technically, the FBI should only be involved if this is across state lines. If this was somehow something where people were trying to plant bombs in school board meetings. No, that's what BLM does. BLM was carting terrorists around the country on airplane rides with anarchists and Antifa to come after our cities. Cut 105, Jen Psaki.
Does the administration agree that parents upset about their kids' curriculums could be considered domestic terrorists?
What the Department of Justice said in a letter from the Attorney General is that, quote, threats against public servants are not only illegal, they run counter to our nation's core values. That is true. These were threats against public servants, threats against members of the school board. Regardless of the reasoning, threats and violence against public servants is illegal. That's what he was conveying from the Department of Justice.
So now we need to use the DOJ, DHS, and FBI to go after threats against public service? How about threats against conservative radio show hosts? I guess spent a lot of time on that. I wouldn't want the FBI to over-involve themselves in that. Use the proper levels of law enforcement as necessary. Meanwhile, Merrick Garland is under a lot of fire, and we were one of the first shows to actually break this story on how Merrick Garland's family has made a lot of money off of implementing critical race theory. Merrick Garland is conflicted. He is trying to chill a movement that would be bad for the Merrick Garland family business. So to answer your question, should you be afraid? No. You should be afraid if you did something wrong. This is all posturing. It's the same. It's all in the same thing. There is no vaccine mandate. It doesn't exist. Joe Biden actually does a press conference from a fake White House set. And is the FBI going to start arresting parents? No. What you do have to worry about, though, is them monitoring your internal communications and them trying to use this as a means to the end to try to endlessly investigate anybody that they might disagree with. That is absolutely a threat. And I will say that I have been somewhat pleased with how almost every kind of camp of conservatives, including the kind of the moderate, weak, vanilla conservatives, they have even been outraged at the DOJ's flexing of muscle here. The more Tucker Carlson wing of the conservative movement has been warning about this for quite some time, but not just overreach of government, but overreach of corporations and of business and the restricting of our freedoms and liberties. Okay, let's get to a question here. Sylvia from Austin, Texas, emailed us freedom@charliekirk.com. Charlie, a new poll shows that 41% of Biden voters and 52% of Trump voters at least somewhat agree that the time has come to split the country into red and blue states. What is your take on this? What is that poll? Can you send that to me, Connor? We have been warning about this for quite some time, that the country is about to go to a national divorce. And you see a lot of conservative podcasters following our lead on that. We've been on top of that. And honestly, it's because of you, the amazing listeners. You guys have been emailing us, freedom@charliekirk.com, and we get tens of thousands of emails in every week or two. And so we really get a good idea of, what are you thinking? What's going on here? Are you happy with your current government? And so I just want to thank those of you that amazingly support us. Business Insider, majority of Trump voters believe it's time to split the country into two. This is where we are headed, quickly. I said this in a meeting recently, and it just got totally silent. People just say, what do you mean? And by the way, let me just be very clear, because a lot of journalists watch this. I think this is terrible. I don't support it, and it is tragic. But it's true. This is what's happening. University of Virginia Center for Politics poll. UVA surveyed 2,000 voters, half of whom voted for Trump, half for Biden, and in late July, in order to get a better understanding of the growing split between the Democrat Party. So I ask people the question, what do I have in common with a BLM incorporated supporting transgender activist in San Francisco? They want people forcibly vaccinated? I don't. They think America's systemically racist? I don't. They think our history goes to the gutter? I don't. They want our borders open? I want our borders closed. They love the tech companies? I don't. They don't revere the Constitution? I do. I could go through the list. Besides us both using dollar bills to transact our business relationships, what do I have in common with that person? They're starting to say, I don't want to live in the same country as them. And guess what? That's what our side is saying too. We have talked about the slow motion secession here on this program for quite some time. That we are seeing the country fall apart quickly. It's going to take a master act of statesmanship to put the country back together. It can be done. And this is why what I believe the grassroots work that we are doing here in the Charlie Kirk Show to empower you to know what's going on, to spread this to your friends, of talking about the success stories, this is what's going to make the ultimate difference, is a bottom-up strategy of people understanding what's happening and not falling for the bait from the ruling class. 2 in 10 Trump voters and Biden voters strongly agree it'd be better if, quote, a president could take needed action without being constrained by Congress or the courts. 80% of respondents from each party saying the opposing side presents a clear and present danger to American democracy. 80% of more survey respondents said they're worried that someone that close to them will experience, quote, personal loss or suffering due to the effects of opposing parties' policies. Illustrating the extent of the underlying divide, nearly 90% of people on both sides agree that people like them won't belong in America anymore if the other side has its way. And has more than 1 in 5 say they agree completely that such is the case. This is not sustainable. It's going to fall apart if we do not have a leadership movement, a movement of hundreds, hopefully thousands, of younger type leaders. And I don't mean younger in age. I mean younger in the mindset. I shouldn't use the word younger. Let's say new, fresh, unique, willing to entertain creative options, not a bunch of Republicans that just want to talk about trillion-dollar infrastructure packages, keeping the borders wide open and cutting corporate taxes. That's not going to save the country. It's falling apart. Okay, let's get to the next question here and that wonderfully uplifting note. And we really are living under two different constitutions. We are. The Age of Entitlement by Christopher Caldwell, one of the best books that I encourage you to read. Half the country believes the Constitution should respect individual rights. The other believes that there should be a Constitution that respects grievance, the mobilization of grievances, the loudest voice in the room, and victimhood-type politics. It's either you believe that people are entitled to other people's property, or you believe that you are entitled to the ability to earn your own property, to take risks, speech, the right to liberty and life given to you by God. It's one side believes in a constitution of government-given rights. The other side believes in a constitution of God-granted rights. Let's get to the next question here. We've been getting a lot of questions around this topic of the southern border. Of Charlie, what's going on with the southern border and what can we do about it? Well, Texas can and should. Let me just get to this question here. Charlie, Paul here on the southern border of Texas. What can Texas do to secure the border? I know you talked about Texas actually enforcing it, but it seems unrealistic. It's not unrealistic. It's that they're unwilling. Donald Trump in Cut 104 said that Central American countries are emptying their prisons into the United States. It's true. Cut 104.
I hear it's 50 countries. They're emptying out their prisons into the United States. Their jails, some of the toughest people on earth, are being dumped into the United States because they don't want them. They don't want to take care of them for the next 40 years. So these people that are the roughest prisoners there are anywhere are being dumped into the United States for us to take care of them.
And of course, when Donald Trump tried to solve the southern border crisis, and he did, they had an entire crisis of kids in cages, even though that did not happen. And yet we now have way worse conditions than kids in cages. Of course, the regime media doesn't care. Hillsdale College, the beacon of the North, the last college, the place of liberty and freedom. They have four purposes: learning, character, faith, and freedom. Education and faith thrive in freedom, and freedom requires an educated people, a people of good character, to preserve it. Hillsdale College has been providing the education needed to preserve free government for over 175 years. It continues to provide that education today, not only to its 1,500 undergraduate and graduate students, but nationwide through its free online courses, its support of classical K-12 charter schools, and its other outreach efforts on behalf of liberty. Hillsdale's Articles of Association, dating back to 1844, commit the college to preserving the blessings of civil and religious liberty through the provision of sound learning. This learning includes the Constitution. It includes the laws of nature and nature's God as described in the Declaration of Independence. It includes America's beautiful heritage of liberty that too often is falsely derided or denied. I'm actually going to be at Hillsdale College in just a couple days, and Hillsdale's model is pursuing truth and defending liberty since 1844. It will continue to fight to live up to that motto come what may. Check out the Beacon of the North, the place that is so beautiful you won't believe it. They have statues of Frederick Douglass, Winston Churchill, George Washington, Maggie Thatcher, Hillsdale College, the place where liberty and truth are defended. So check it out. Make sure you register for the online courses. We'll take them together, everybody. I am working through the Western Heritage course. I want to hear from you. Go to charlie4hillsdale.com. That's Charlie, F-O-R, Hillsdale.com. Check it out. Hey, Charlie, I listened to your episode with James O'Keefe about the Pfizer vaccine and fetal cells. It seems like millions of Americans were denied their constitutionally guaranteed right to a religious exemption in our federal system. What can we do about that? Class action lawsuit. Do you think Fauci, Biden, and the crew knew that Pfizer was covering this up? And if so, how could our leaders lie to us like that? Well, they lie with the ease of breathing, unfortunately. That is the way that the ruling class operates in this country. And it's really unfortunate to say that. I don't know what the recourse could be. I know a lot of people are talking about lawsuits and kind of restitution. There will be a significant amount of legal action, and I think, movement coming from this point forward. But so far, the courts have been lackluster when it comes to the vaccine issue, citing the Jacobson v. Massachusetts decision, which, by the way, was used by Justice Louis Brandeis in the 1920s as a reasoning and as a basis to forcibly sterilize over 60,000 idiot women, is what they called it, idiot women. The very same decision, Jacobson v. Massachusetts, which allowed the government to force vaccinations, was used as precedent to sterilize women against their will because they were idiot women. That was when eugenics ran the country, and that's where we're headed back to. Woodrow Wilson was a eugenicist. He was a Darwinist, as was many of the people that came out of the Johns Hopkins School. And that is where we are headed next. Okay, let's get to the next question here. Got a lot of good questions here that I want to get to. Hey, Charlie, what do you make of the recent jobs report, and what does that mean for the economy moving forward? We've already been through the inflation cycle. We've been through how prices are rising. We've been through the consumer confidence going down. The recent job report that came out today is abysmal. I want to play a couple cuts on that. Let's play cut 116, where CNN has said it's the worst of the year. Cut 116.
Off the presses, a brand new jobs report, a look at the state of the economy. Chief business correspondent Christine Romans with the new details. What does it say?
All right, let me just run through the top line numbers for you here, John, because it's a real brain teaser. 194,000 net new jobs added, way less than anybody expected, and less than last month, and the worst of the year.
The worst of the year. Chris Wallace on Fox News on the September jobs report, cut 117.
Numbers, those are very bad for Joe Biden. Look, these are tough votes for moderates spending so much money, for progressives not spending as much money as they want. It's a lot easier to vote for a president, hold your nose whether you think it's too much or too little, if a president has an approval rating in the high 50s or even in the low 60s. When he's at 38% approval,
yep.
38%, not in the 40s, 38%. He doesn't provide much political cover. You're seeing that in the Virginia governor's race.
Joe Biden's approval rating is at 38%. So what does this mean for the economy moving forward? Brace for impact. They are running this country into the ground. Every single policy that they are putting forward is an intentional destruction of the American way of life. Why? So they can then justify the nationalization of such industries and the eradication of private property. These people do not mean well. Their intentions are not our intentions. They want a different type of America. They want an America where entrepreneurship is not valued and government dependence is. They want to stay and remain in control. And the activists amongst their ranks, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they believe that it's all part of breaking the back of a colonialist, racist, misogynistic, and imperialistic system that will then allow the mass redistribution of wealth to the victimized groups that they pretend to represent. The economy is about to go through a much rougher patch than people realize. What do they want to do? They want to spend another $4.7 trillion on top of it while we're already in the midst of an inflation cycle. Everybody, what did the founding fathers say about slavery? This incredible short from our friends at Hillsdale College, charlie4hillsdale.com. Everyone should go right now and register to the Hillsdale online courses, charlie4hillsdale.com. Is this amazing little short right here might answer your questions and hopefully pique your curiosity to have you dive deeper into wisdom and the history of our country. What did the founding fathers say about slavery? Let's listen.
Hamilton and Madison both referred to slaves as men. This is a critical insight because if slaves are men, if slaves are human beings, then that means that they have inalienable natural rights. And that means that slavery can only rest on the basis of positive law, that it's by definition an injustice, and they understood it as such. Thomas Jefferson, in one of the most famous statements on slavery to come out of the American founding, Query 18, in Notes on the State of Virginia, explains that slavery is at war with human nature and with justice. He says it's bad for slaves because it teaches them to hate their country and it teaches them to lack self-assertion. But It's also bad for masters. It teaches masters to become tyrants. It warps them. It teaches them to have contempt for the rights of other human beings. And once they learn to have contempt for the rights of their slaves, they then transfer that and learn to have contempt for the rights of others who are not slaves. Finally, it's bad for society. It's bad for the country as a whole. Jefferson says that we are so wrong on the question of slavery that it is certain that God will punish us if we don't get it right. In fact, he says if it ever came down to a contest between slaves and masters over the future of the country, Jefferson says, quote, "The Almighty has no attribute which can take side with us in such a contest," end quote. So, in short, we can see pretty quickly that the Founding Fathers understood that they had a colossal problem on their hands, that slavery was a massive injustice, and they understood it as such. What did the founders do about slavery? Because again, to say that they did not end slavery altogether is not the same as saying that they did nothing about it. For instance, during the founding and early American period, 9 states became free states. All of the states, the original states, north of Maryland, so from Pennsylvania northward, became free states, abolished slavery in one way or another. Slave states eased their manumission laws. And a manumission is simply an individual act of emancipation where an individual owner frees an individual slave. So it was made easier to free one's slaves in the southern states that retained slavery. And as a result, thousands of slaves were manumitted. Now, this does not end the institution of slavery altogether, but it is certainly important to you if you are one of those thousands who was manumitted during this period. We also see instances of Southern courts favoring the claims of slaves who were suing for their freedom. In fact, this is how the Dred Scott case got its start in the Missouri state courts. In ruling against Dred Scott in 1850, the Missouri Supreme Court admitted that if Dred Scott's case had come before the court, say, 10 years earlier, they most certainly would have freed him. But times had changed, and so they were no longer honoring the friendly agreement that they had with free states to respect the laws of those states because of the intensification of the slavery controversy. There were also reforms in the slave states that tended to recognize the humanity of slaves. By the beginning of the 19th century, North Carolina had reformed its laws so that killing a slave carried the same penalty as killing a free person. It was still hard to obtain a conviction, but at least this is a recognition that a slave is in fact a human being and not an article of livestock. There was the abolition of the slave trade, which was legally abolished in 1807, and the abolition took effect in 1808. Later on, the slave trade was declared to be piracy, making it a death penalty offense. This was a law which was extremely hard to enforce in the age of sail, but at least you have a declaration of a commitment to end this inhumane practice. If one looks to the Constitution itself, one notices that conspicuously absent from the entire Constitution, including the provisions that deal directly with slavery, is the word slave in any variation. Madison, Frederick Douglass, Abraham Lincoln all came to the same conclusion about why this was the case. They did not want to taint the document with any implication that slavery existed, so that if someone came along in the future without any particular knowledge of our history or politics, they could not read the original Constitution and know that slavery had been a part of it. If one turns to the particular provisions in the Constitution that deal with slavery, we also can see ambiguities and compromises that reflect the founders' desire to see slavery gradually removed from our society. The importation clause in Article 1, Section 9 was looked upon by many people as a death sentence for slavery. It was widely believed at the time that slave populations could not be self-sustaining, that only continual importation would allow slavery to survive in a particular community. And so many people, such as James Wilson, believed that cutting off the slave trade killed slavery itself. And that proved to be largely true in many places, except in America. In America, the slave population, contrary to expectations, proved to be self-supporting. Finally, if one is looking at what the founders did about slavery, perhaps the most important thing that they did about slavery was to pass a piece of legislation called the Northwest Ordinance. So the Northwest Territory was the full area in which the federal government could control slavery, and the Northwest Ordinance banned it in perpetuity, and it was passed by a large margin in Congress both times under both forms of government. And this was significant in a number of ways. Indiana, when it petitioned for statehood, asked for the right to be exempt from the Northwest Ordinance. Now, one does not ask for that exemption if one wants to be a free state. And the federal government told them that they were not exempted. They could remain free under the Northwest Ordinance, or they could become a free state. So it certainly made one state that might have been a slave state into a free state. It provided, when we got to the Civil War, an enormous amount of manpower and material resources for the Union war effort. And finally, the language of the slavery prohibition in the Northwest Ordinance became the basis for the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, outlawing slavery nationwide by constitutional amendment. So many things were done to restrict slavery, to hem it in, as Lincoln would later say, within the narrowest limits of necessity.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our program, you can do so at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.